Okay, I think we're going to go ahead and start at the magic hour. I'm going to go ahead and lead us in prayer, and then we will launch, all right? And I don't know why it's echoing, but there it is. Gracious God, we give you thanks for the opportunity to gather together around your presence. We acknowledge you are here in the midst, and we ask your spirit to lead and guide our sharing and our discussion, that it might build us all towards better service in your kingdom. Jesus, in your name we pray. You make it possible. Amen.
Amen.
Mark and I are very grateful for the privilege of opportunity to share about our story and this is really echoing. I don't know what the deal is. Does that help? Well, we'll see. This is an opportunity for us to think back. We just came off of 4 days of driving back from New Mexico, so we had a lot of time to think about our life and how we ended up spending 13 years in Tanzania at the end of our professional career as teachers and as educators. When you think about this idea of a missionary call or what a call is, I think when we both came to it in a different way, but when we got to the end result, which said, yes, we will go spend 13 years in Tanzania, there's something about it that happens when you finally come to a point of saying, yes, this is right for me, right for us to do this. So what we're going to try to do is to kind of give you a little bit of chronology and history as to how we got here, but also it will also show how different we tend to process things. As some of you who know us, you might assume that Marv and I process life a little differently and there's no right or wrong to this. It's just different. You know how that goes? For me, I would say it began truly in my baptism when I, in the middle of a snowstorm in February, when I was baptized after being born, within a couple of weeks, there is something about when I was taught about my baptism that God called me and to be in relationship and to be a disciple. And what that had meant was that my aim in life was to follow and to be obedient and to use my gifts and skills, whatever I developed in the vocation of being Christian, of being a disciple, and what that meant. I certainly also developed an occupation, which was different, which was to teach and to administrate and do those kind of things and using those kind of skill sets. But there's a calling that happens, I think, in baptism that puts a mark on us and to say, now, Gene, you belong to God. And therefore, because you belong to God, there's different things that are going to happen. You're going to in that way. Some key events in my life, I think, that were participated in our finally getting to a missionary call, should we say. And one of them was when I was 19, I was studying at a Bible college in Los Angeles. And one of the things that happened was that I got invited to participate in a team of six of us to go down to South America. And when you're 19 and you get to go to South America, woo, it was a pretty heady deal. I got invited because I could play guitar. Would you believe that it actually got me a job? No, that it was a way, or it was part of my being a part of this group that was going down. We had one leader, our youth director back from Minneapolis, and then there was five of us that were going to go down. And the point of going was to learn about what do missionaries do. And this was in 1963. Yes, I am that old. Okay. 1963, I'm 19 and I'm going with a bunch of my fellows from Bible college, and we're going down to visit some missionaries in Ecuador, Peru, and Bolivia. So those were the three countries we visited. And we went from missionary home to missionary home and to see what they were doing. One was working in radio work in Bolivia down in the Altobeni River area. Some were doing teaching and they were doing language studies. Some of them were doing some church planting. Most of them were doing education. A lot of them were doing teaching. And so in my 19-year-old brain, that kind of impacted to say, I think you sometimes think about what does a missionary do? What do they look like? How are they? And I soon learned they're people just like me. They're just normal people like you and I, and they have occupations and jobs and skill sets that they offer to God in that country, in that context. Yes, they had to learn the language. Yes, they had to learn about the culture. We learned about eating all kinds of different kind of foods. And my mother did not cook with jalapenos. You know, my Swedish mother did not know what that was. But I soon learned in terms of South America that there was a lot of different kinds of things that they ended up eating. So I learned a lot by simply observing and seeing the difference. I think that's why I've been very committed here at St. Andrews to sponsor youth trips and to do cross-cultural stuff because there's nothing like being exposed to it and being able to see it and observe it with your eyes, and you taste and feel it and you get a chance to do it. It came down to New Year's Eve in 1964 that we were gathered on the top of a Wycliffe Bible Translator house in Lima, Peru. And our youth director challenged us to say, so what are you going to do with this experience? You've had an experience that no other 19-year-olds get to do. And I said, well, as we each prayed and thought about it, I said, I want to stay global mission-minded. I never want to get to a point where I don't know what's going on in the world, that, you know, God might be open to things. I also committed myself to reading one global mission book every year to somehow keep myself in my mind open to the idea of global missions. I never thought I would ever go. Believe me, it's always for someone else to go. But I thought, oh, it would be good to be, you know, understanding about that. So I remember that commitment that I wanted to stay globally mission-minded. I want to keep involved with what is God doing in the other parts of the world, that 19-year-old impressionable at that point. Then God really got my attention over ice cream at Holden Village. And some of you may have heard this one before, but it's really where it started, because this was my first journey in that way to get to know some missionaries in Tanzania, and thus began the African connection. Because I thought if I was going to go any place, you know, it would have been South America, because that was my experience. And then at Holden Village, I met David and Eunice Simonson, who were ALC missionaries at that time in Tanzania. And he was doing both church planting, but also serving as a pastor of a church in that way. And we found out we had many, many things in common. So when we got to the end of the week, Eunice says, so Gene, what are you doing next summer? And I said, well, a friend of mine thought about biking around Amsterdam and Holland, because it's very flat. You know, if you've ever been there, it's flat and it's an easy place to go biking. I mean, I lived in Seattle and I thought, no, I don't want to go bike. I don't want to bike here. I'll go flatland. So in the process, she said, well, why don't you come see us? Why don't you come down and see us? And I didn't know what that meant. And she said, you just go to Amsterdam and you take a right. And there we are. about 19 hours later. But it was that kind of an experience. And so a friend of mine and I, we did. And again, I got to see what missionaries were doing. And this was in 1987. Thank you. So in 1987, my friend, we spent 2 weeks following him around. Again, it built some relationships. I got to meet the bishop there, Bishop Thomas Leiser. I got to meet so many of the other colleagues that were there. And I got to see, again, a variety of occupations. The Murignacs are doing fish farming. Hagbergs are down working in some medical things in the center of the country. And Jacobsons were working at a hospital. And so I got to see all of that. And I, at the time, you don't think anything of it. You just do it, you know. But as we reflected on it, I realized God was preparing my brain and my heart to say, this is realistic. You could actually maybe go do this kind of thing. All right. So then I come home, and in 1988, enter Marvin.
Our stories are not quite the same. She was baptized at a couple weeks old because that's what they did. That's what Lutherans did, Christians did. I was baptized at 6 months. And the reason I was baptized at 6 months is that I had a whooping cough and they weren't sure I was going to live. Entire different family values. I went through life. Let's see how to explain that. As quietly and as quickly as I could. Because sometimes people don't have quite as nice childhood as she had. I went through college. I graduated. I ended up in the Peace Corps. After 4 years of teaching public school, I ended up in Peace Corps because I have a noble heart and I needed a second language for graduate school. So I signed up for the Peace Corps for that and went into West Africa, Sierra Leone. And everything there is poisonous and dangerous and hot. It never cools. And when I left there, I thought I will never go back to Africa again unless it's at the bomb site of a B-52, you know? We're talking about different values here. And then in 1988, I met her. And, I tried to change her mind, but not possible. So I had to change.
Well, it was a mutual changing. Let's put this together. In that whole thing when we met, I said, if we ever get serious, you know, dating, and we ever really get to the point that we, you know, really want to get serious, talk about marriage, I said, you should know that I was in Tanzania in 1987, previous year, and I, at that time, had committed myself to the bishop that I would come back on my next sabbatical. And I thought I could talk some of the other faculty members at LBI that they should go because they were the major Bible teacher. I was the choral music director and I taught a lot in education pedagogy, how to teach. That was what I was involved with in terms of as an educator. And so I went to the president and he said, well, you know, you do have a sabbatical coming up and you teach keys to Bible study. You teach, some of the biblical, Psalms and some other things. You know, why don't you think about you going? Cause nobody else was going to go. And we had this invitation that had come to say, please come and help us teach our evangelists. Come and help us with materials and methodology that will be more effective in teaching the scriptures. And, we have evangelists and I couldn't figure out what an evangelist was in contrast to a pastor. I knew a pastor from us. But the way the church is structured in Tanzania is that you have a clergy person who goes to seminary and gets ordained, and they do Mary Berry and supper and the baptism. And then under this clergy person, they get they're told that this is your parish. This is your larger parish. Under the parish, you will have maybe 10, 12 different places of worship. And every place of worship has an evangelist. And they are lay people from the area where they live so that, it's not, they get some training, but they get training by the one clergy, one pastor. And so this person is the one who gets, they train the others. But what was happening is that the church in Tanzania was expanding so fast and increasing so many that there were so many more evangelists that they couldn't get to training them all. So they said, could we give them some help, some commentary, some way that we could teach them for the Sunday? And so that was what they came to LBI because we taught a lot. We taught Bible. And can you help us write Bible studies? So I had said, had thought it through and said, OK, I'm willing to come on my next sabbatical, which was 92, 93. Okay. So this is back in 1988 and Marvin and I had just gotten unmarried. We'd met each other and we were just in the process of getting to know each other. So I told him up front because you know, I tend to be fairly direct. And so I said, you know, if we get serious, you should know that I've already committed my next sabbatical in 92, 93 to go back to Africa, East Africa, Tanzania, and to help them write Bible studies and train evangelists. Okay. And he said, of course.
Where do we get a B-52? I write books. I do that kind of stuff. And I had a wonderful life. And I finally met the Lord personally, one-on-one, right after I got sober. And that step one in changing my life. Step two is learning how to write. And then finally, I got a book contract, which you live and die by. And I thought it's time to meet somebody. And I met this one. And I thought, this strict lady is the one who's going to teach me how to date and how to be social. And for 9 months, we sort of dated when she had time in her life. And in the ninth month, the heart just fell out of my chest. And I thought, I'm in love. But she kept mentioning this word, word, Africa, you know? And I said, if we get married, I will explain what Africa is really like, because she was only there 2 weeks. What did she know? You know? And I would explain what Africa is really like, and we wouldn't have to go. As we got married, and I explained to her, and I explained to her, and I explained it to her, and I carefully explained, and I slowly explained it to her. And after about 20 times, I realized I'm probably going to Africa. Now there's another option that she didn't mention. We had also had a chance to go to London for that year's sabbatical. Hey, Gene, I have an idea. But Africa won out over her heart. And so in 92, we went there. I have just finished writing up about that year, what it's like. I don't know if I'll ever sell it or anything, because it's 300,000 words, 500 pages. It's a bit too much to anybody to handle. But it was a terrific, dynamic year. I was there the first day, sitting there. I said, I can pout through this for a whole year. No problem. I can grunt my way through. And on day three, I'm looking around thinking, it's really nice here. Whole different experience. And at that moment, on that day three, I came halfway the fact of being able to love Africa. And then the rest of the year, the story that nobody will ever have to read is really great, because you can just see this grumpy guy getting softer and more gentle. We ended up in Africa. They had to write Bible studies on a fourth grade level. If you know much about God, I was a fourth grade school teacher. I knew that stuff. We were a team. Gene?
Yeah. So the way that particular year worked is that I basically would take his heresy and try to convert it into, you know, it worked quite well, because he would edit, we would do the content together. We sat with a team of Tanzanians, and we said, what do you want to say to your evangelists? What do you want to have them taught? And so they came up with a list of things, and they, in terms of topics, and then we would work the approach. Marv would do the final edit and everything else, and then we would actually publish it locally there with, you know, the old crank kind of thingies. We were doing some of that stuff, and then disseminating it out through the clergy to all the evangelists in the Arusha diocese in the northern part of Tanzania. So we come back from that, and we say, okay, done. We've done our missionary thing, you know, that's it. We go back now to the LBI. We go back to work and all that stuff. And then, my president said, why don't you take a group of students? Because you did this in South America and you did other places. You've saw the experience of what happens when college kids and other that area get exposed. So I said, yeah, we can do that. So we went back in, the next year, we developed like a J-term. You know, we took a lot of, we had about 12, I think, students from LBI, and we went back to Tanzania, and we had them work with us, and got a chance to work at Maasai Girl School, which was just a little bit just starting at that particular point, and a couple other things in the process. Anyway, so then we get home, we get done this 3-month thing, and then we go, okay, done. We've really done our African thing, and we're home now. We're just going to come back and stay home, you know. And then we get this invitation again from the bishop, and the bishop says, this school you've just been exposed to, we want to establish it on a long-term basis, and it needs some stability. We have a need for a chaplain. We have a need for English teaching. We have to establish, because in Tanzania, the way the language and studies work is that, they come out of 120 different tribal groups. All right, speaking their home language, their original language. All right. And then they go to primary and they must speak Kiswahili, which is the national language. And so they learn Swahili in the process. Then when you get to junior high, grade 7, et cetera, and on the way up, all of that from then on is done in English. So students in Tanzania have to do 3 languages. And then you might add another one if they want to later on. But you think about yourself. I mean, I tried to learn a second language at age 50 when we finally went on a long-term basis. And that's tough enough. But if you think about, if I had spoken Swedish in my homeland, and then I went to school and I spoke English, and then I went to Germany to study it's beyond my comprehension what these students in Tanzania have to do in order to to get to the point of education. When we got back, the bishop had already asked us, would you consider coming on a long-term basis, on a permanent basis, as like a real job? And not just simply a sabbatical or 3 months, but would you consider that? He said, I want you to decide that first, if you really feel God is calling you and wanting you to be here, before I go through all the rigmarole of sending the documents into Chicago of doing, and Pastor's nodding her head. I mean, she understands that paperwork business. The bishop said, I'm not going to send all that request through Chicago and to find money, and for them to go find money to support you while you're here, unless you're going to say yes. He said, I want you to know you're going to say yes before I do all that, because he knew the system. He'd been around. He knew what was taking place and how all the protocol worked. And so I remember Marv and I, we approached decision-making just a little differently. And I said, I need to go away for a weekend. Yeah, Marv is going like this. Yeah. We went away for a weekend, and I did my usual left brain kind of thing. If any of you understand Myers-Briggs, I am an ESTJ. So I needed to look at the pros and cons. I made lists. I called my advisor friendship over the years, people that have mentored me.
ESTJ means very boring.
And I said, can you see me doing this? Is this a good thing? I checked with my family. I mean, I'm ticking off all the boxes, okay? So that I can, find some sense of direction. And one of the things that that came across in my reading of scripture, and it's been meaningful, I think, even before then, but Acts 16, which is where you find the Macedonian call, where the folks in Macedonia tell Paul and Silas, please come over and help us. And this is exactly what was happening to us. Please come over and help us. We have a need. They had identified their need, and they said, you folks have the skill sets that we need to fill that need. Okay. So for me, part of my decision making was sort of, it had to make sense to me. It had to be logical. There had to be some sense that said, it's okay, Gene, you can go ahead and leave your 90-year-old mother and whatever else, and it's okay. God will take care of her and the family. I also have 8 brothers and sisters. There's plenty of them to take care of your 90-year-old mother. Don't worry. And, I had to kind of work that through. And so all the boxes got checked. And so I think at the end of this weekend, we had gone away to pray and to think and talk about it. I said, Marv, I'm going to say yes. So what happened, Marv, tell about, how did you come to that decision?
First of all, you heard we were in Africa three times before we made that decision. Different trips. My first trip to Africa or to Tanzania with her was we moved into they gave us a house that we could live in, and there was a doctor living there. So they got another place for us, and there was an architect living there. And finally, they found a third place where we could live, walked in, there was one light bulb. The other things had been ripped out, including the toilet seats. And they said, home. So the first 3 months we were there, it was rebuilding an entire house with curtains, a lot of work before you even got started. The second time we went back, let's see, and then we wrote Bible studies. Second time we came back after the students flew home, we were there for another almost 3 months. We wrote as many Bible studies in that second time as we did the entire first year because we knew what we were doing, had a whole different focus. Third time we came back, continued the work, and that's when something I learned very carefully. When a bishop invites you out for dinner, he will pay for dinner, but you will pay for the rest of your life. He made this really stupid offer. We would like to work to get you to be our missionaries here. And my silly heart saying, okay, what happened to me? Yeah, what has happened? What do you want me to talk about here?
No, that's
what happens? That's enough?
That's it. Yeah, Marv just, he came to a conclusion that said, it's right. It just is. It's right. And I'm fine. So it was me that had to kind of work. He actually was going to say no on Friday. It took me till Sunday night before I had worked through all my little boxes to make sure that I felt good about going. And so in response to the Macedonian call, we said yes in that process. And then the school wanted to start in 1996. But I was then serving as the academic dean at LBI, and we needed to get through a self-study accreditation report, which would take us 2 years. And so my president said, no, you can't go until 98. So I told the bishop, we'll come in 98, and he was willing to wait. And we went back, and we finished the accreditation in June of 1998. And I think it was on June 10th, and I resigned, and I was unemployed for 10 days. And then I went to work for the ELCA Global Missions and on June 20th. And then in July, we took off for language school, and thus you know the rest of the story. In thinking about what is a missionary call or our call to mission service, I would say there's two things that would anchor it for me. One was the idea about relationships. Watch who you're friends with. Watch the relationships you get to build, the people you spend time with, and some of the relationships. If it hadn't been for Simonson, we both liked the same kind of ice cream at Holden Village, which meant, seriously, we were in line. And they took, and so we started talking about ice cream, would you believe? And thus it began a relationship. And we found out who they were. I didn't know who they were. They said, yeah, we're missionaries in Tanzania. Well, what do you do as a missionary? You know, the conversation. But relationships, and I can tell you the other relationships all the way down, and then opportunities to actually go experience a little bit, to take advantage. The second thing I would say is that there was an intent of for myself to stay open to whatever God might bring across my plate. The idea of staying connected. I wanted to stay connected through reading, through scripture, through worship, through involvement. Very honestly, when I came to join St. Andrews in 1983, when I came, Carol Meekie was my mentor, and we had a mentor program then so that any new member got a mentor. And so Carol and I would go to lunch and we'd talk about various things. And then I had the, you know, interview with the pastor. And so Pastor Jim says, so what would you like to do at St. Andrews? What are you interested in? I said two things. One, I wanted a fellowship group. I said I was looking to be involved in a koinonia group, a fellowship group. I said I want people other than LBI people that I work with every day. And that's why I didn't go to Cross of Christ, very honestly, because all the LBI people were going to Cross of Christ. So I said, I bought a condo north of here, north of Robbinsdale, and I took a little protractor and went around and said, where's the closest church I can walk to? That's how I came to St. Andrews, folks. I mean, for no other reason. I didn't know about any outreach or any of the other stuff. I didn't know about Aki Rolander because of Tanzania, but anyway. So Jim said, what do you want to do? I said, I want to be in a fellowship group. Fine. Put me in a group. Two, I said, I'm interested in global missions. I said, what are you doing in global missions? And he goes, well, nothing right now, but what would you like to do? You know, and he was smart enough to let me sort of launch and stay mission-minded and stay globally involved. Because ever since Oscar Rolander had left, St. Andrews really wasn't doing anything globally. And I say he was... He just said, well, what would you like to start? And that appealed to me in that regard, that there was an openness at least to do something. So relationships, and then the idea of staying connected, staying, keeping your mind, reading the pages of the news about global stuff and other things. All of this came together. You know, it just wasn't just one little thing. There was no bolt of lightning for us to say, oh, to Tanzania. It was a normal progression of life, you know, event after event, et cetera, and then matching the skill set with the need. One of the things we really enjoyed about working with the Lutheran Church is that's the way they do missions. You don't just wait and say, oh, God has called me to go to Timbuktu, wherever it is. And then you just go, and then you get there, and somebody's got one of the local people are going to say, what are you doing here? You know, why did you come? Oh, God called me and sent me. To do what? Well, I don't know yet, but, you know, that doesn't work. In missions today, that doesn't work, because the global church, there's a very functioning church in Tanzania. Over 50% of the population will identify with the church in Tanzania. 30% about with Muslim, and then there's traditional religions in a small minority at this particular time, and that's like 60 million people, you know. So they're doing a fine job of evangelism. They're doing a fine job. What they need are some special skills, see. And when people ask me, well, I want to be a missionary. What do I do? I said, you get your skill set together. You find out what you can do. You find out what God has equipped you to do, whether it's medical, educational, agricultural. They're looking for people who can teach them how to do better agriculture, environmental stuff, production, how to run businesses. I mean, they're looking for resource people that can help them do what they're already starting to do, you know, in many of the countries, and that's what they're looking at. So in the Lutheran Church, the need has to be there. The host church has to invite us in. We don't push our way in. And then they list and post. There's a website that's posted all the open opportunities around the world that have come to the ELCA to say, can you come and help us? Now, anything else you want to say before we ask questions?
Yeah, two things. First of all, there's something mythical about missionaries to Africa. You just got to know this. We are not holier than thou. We are goofier than thou. And we just have survival skills. John here in the church asked, he said, how did you know that God wanted you to go to Africa? And I said, well, after 12 years, we came back and looked to see what we'd done and said, yeah, it must have been God, because it certainly was not us. We spent 12 years covered with a grace that we will never understand. We had a confidence, courage. We lived in a round one room hut in Africa for those 12 and a half years. And, we knew we were right place. What does that mean? I can't explain it to you, but it was right. One of the things I objected when we came back is you guys for 12 years had put and prayed for our missionaries, Gene and Marvin. When that was taken out of the bulletin, it felt like somebody taking away my umbrella and I was out in the rain. It was amazing. The Holy Spirit guided us, used us, protected us, and then It's his fault, her fault, their fault. So we are now ready to take any questions.
Yeah.
It's her fault. The woman did it.
I'll try to answer. One is, to some extent, a bit of logic. The Lutheran Church, from Europe on down, have been involved in Tanzania even before the Americans got involved with it. Africans believe that every human being is spiritual, right? It depends upon what you do with that spirit as to who your God is or who you, but they're, every person has, that's a very much inbuilt in their culture, right? And so, the first people to bring the gospel into Tanzania were the white fathers, Roman Catholic fathers that came down a long time ago. But the Lutherans there and coming down, the people of Tanzania, and to me, that's one of the indications of that we're very, very open. So the Lutherans have been there a long time. We're very established. The church has developed over 100 years in Tanzania. So it's not like a new thing in that regard. And so there was many different connections. And because the relationships have been strong in Tanzania. So therefore, when and this is a God thing for me as to why we ended up in Tanzania is because of Simonson's, because of that relationships. Absolutely. We would never have gone to let's say China or Asia or some other place. I didn't have any relationships. Why would I go? They don't even know about us, you know, but these people, you look logically a little bit at some of that and because of their openness. And I want to just piggyback on Marv's comment about, you know, looking back. You know, along the way, there were signs that we were being effective because of your prayers, because of the support, because of what was happening with the girls at Muslim Girls School. This was being successful. I mean, I think you can look at some of the fruit. We talked about that in Bible study this morning. You know, was there a fruit from our being there? You know, how were our supervisors? What was the bishop saying about us? You know, was he saying, oh, get those guys on it? You know, I mean, you listen to some of that. Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. There's no question about it.
My friend Gary has a question.
Yeah, and they're also extremely tolerant in terms of religion. They have a policy to some extent. It's unwritten, but one president, he goes, who is Christian usually, 2 terms, and then there's a Muslim president, 2 terms, and then there's a Christian president, 2 terms, and then there's a Muslim president, 2 terms. It's not in their constitution, but it's kind of the way it works. Yeah.
Okay, politically, we're not like Sierra Leone or Rwanda. Tanzania has 120 tribes, different languages. There are so many that nobody can fight for power. And so they have never had a revolution in Tanzania, except maybe for their independence, which they didn't even fight for. England was so glad to get rid of them. They just let them go free. We never had a problem with that. That was not an issue. Other countries around us were, but never Tanzania.
Yep. And secondly, about fear, as far as no, never, not personally. And I never felt any fear for myself or for my livelihood.
Except for driving.
Once in a while, driving, you had to be really careful, just simply because they don't understand what is normal courtesy of the rules. There is no such thing there. And if any of you ever been in much in Africa, they just, if there's space, you drive. We were concerned about our stuff because they want your stuff. They don't want to challenge you. They don't ever want to do anything harmful to you, because they know that the military or police are going to come and they would get you so much more, give you so much more grief. I mean, seriously, they wouldn't want to embarrass. It's a shame culture. So if they had done something to a white person there, it would have shame on their family, on their whole village. Everything would have been a really a problem. But no, I didn't. And the last one, a third about bugs and whatever else. You just live through it. I mean, you know, yes, we got every shot there was, you know, and we learned about hygiene and all the things we had to do. And we hired Tanzanians to take care of us. And they know, they've been living in this stuff for a long, lot longer than we had. So we learned about NZs and CCMEZI and all kinds of little weird things that can make you uncomfortable, but you live through it. I mean, it wasn't any worse than growing up on the farm in Minnesota for me.
Except for the malaria.
Except the malaria got was a bit of a problem.
Three
we got
times,
malaria
both of us.
Two, three times. But you, malaria is just like a bad flu, really bad flu.
And we're going to go for shorter answers.
Okay, shorter
Other questions.
Answers. Question. Mine would have been that things don't happen fast enough. Change doesn't happen fast enough. We realized that when we came that I couldn't change their system of how they get things done. I had to learn that you don't write memos to somebody above you. You only write memos to somebody below you in the status.
She learned that after she wrote to somebody above
you. Yeah, and I got reprimanded. I mean, you just accept it and say, you're right, I goofed. I didn't understand that. Please forgive me. You learn to say it really easily. But to learn to wait for this class of students, we now have, you know, our students are over 1,000 that have gone through Maasai Girls School. We have lawyers. We have some that are going to be ministers of parliament. I'm convinced. We've got a lot of folks. We have doctors. We have, I mean, there's the professions of what they've gone on to do. They are going to do the changing in their world.
2 minutes.
Got it. Does that answer, Michelle? Yeah. I want things to happen fast. They don't happen.
So do I, Rick.
Questions? Yeah. Bev?
Can you tell them just briefly about your dog?
Tell us about our dog.
Macho?
We had this big 110-pound dog named Macho. Macho being the word for eyes in Swahili, so it's not the American meaning of macho. It meant eyes. 110 pounds. He killed a honey badger once that attacked one of our guards. He was dumb and loyal, and we appreciated him. And he had the same color as a lion, and the locals were not at all excited about going near our house.
Yeah. He was a cross between a Rottweiler and a German Shepherd, if you want to visualize that kind of thing, and very well fed, so he was not a problem. Anything further? Because we're at that point, sort of.
We miss our work there.
Yeah.
Coming back here was just disappointing because over there, for a brief time, we made a different people's life. And it really, really meant a lot. And they know that, you know, we love them openly. They were never afraid of us. As a teacher, we never carried a stick, which is kind of the Tanzanian way to do things. And they learned from us. They came back to America, and it's just so calm here and so clean, and there's no dust and dirt, and we're not afraid of getting, you know, goofy things in our mouths, dirt or, you know.
Oh,
in America, when we get diarrhea, we can figure out why. Over there, had no clue.
Yeah, you just live with it. I guess I would want to say that, We're very grateful to experience. Would we go back again? Yes. If there was something that we could do, and contribute, we would want to contribute to their society and contribute to the school or in some other way. We did go back for 3 months, you know, and taught at the new nursing college. We also went back and filled in for some teachers at Maasai Girls School. It's one of the reasons that we're now very involved with the Navajo, because it is Navajo is another nation. It's a global experience as well. But without a doubt, and I would love to take you all back to have an experience so that you can meet the people that impacted our lives. I want to end by saying it was an experience for us to learn a tremendous amount about God and about God's work from these Christian and brothers in the faith.
And one more question.
Yeah, we did not go there to, evangelize. We went there to help them doing what they are already doing is, I think, the thing that I really wanted to say. We learned a tremendous a lot more than I think that we ever taught them. in the process. Yeah, Sherry.
No, I just wanted to say thank you very much, Jean and Mar, for doing this program. It has been just awesome, wonderful. Thank you, thank you, thank you for all that you have done. You are a great inspiration for all of us. Yes, applause.
You're very welcome, and you all know where we live and that we normally show up here. So if you have other questions in terms of any of the stuff we've said, feel free to ask.
Thank you.
Thank you all.